school has not become a communal resource. It's become a private enterprise administered by professionals, almost as if it was medicine, you know, very expensive medicine.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
I'm Pat Ferenga, and I have three daughters, ages 17, 14, and 11. They've been homeschooled all their lives, although at different times they've chosen to go into school. I've also worked with the late John Holt from 1981 until his death in 1985, and then he left me the company, Holt Associates, to continue his work. And I published the magazine Growing Without Schooling for 16 years. It's actually the nation's, probably the world's first homeschooling magazine that John started in 1977. And I'm the author of several books about homeschooling, the most recent being Teach Your Own, the John Holt Book of Homeschooling.
Holt has been criticized for, he's not realistic because he had no children, so how would he know how challenging it is to stay at home? You've homeschooled and you're still doing it. What do you think? Because I know you're applying John Holt's.
I have heard that criticism during when John was alive, and then I've heard it since then because the editor of our magazine, Susanna Scheffer, doesn't have any children, and she continued the magazine. And by the way, neither did the editor between them, Donna Richaud, although when she did give birth, she stopped editing the magazine and moved out of the country, unfortunately. But then we're fortunate enough to get Susanna in. So I really have a hard time understanding that criticism, because what John was saying, first of all, was that school is not the best place for children to learn. And he is speaking on the basis of his considerable experience as a fifth grade teacher in schools throughout North America. And secondly, John deliberately put himself into situations where he would be around children. And I'm not just talking about at work. This is a man who, for enjoyment, would pretend to be reading. Well, initially he would just sit on park benches and watch children. But by the time I met him in the early 80s, he had already felt uncomfortable doing that, given the weird looks he was getting from parents, because the climate had changed from the 60s to the 80s. And seeing an adult sitting on a park bench observing children play was suddenly a suspect activity. So John would then bring a newspaper or a book and pretend to be reading that so he could continue his observations. And certainly, as someone who booked him, when John would speak at different universities or institutes and whatnot, when I came on board in the early 1981, he was doing at least two or three engagements a month. But before that, when he was very popular in the late 60s and early 70s, he was on the road almost, you know, 2 to 3 weeks out of every month of the year. And when he did speak, he didn't like to be put up in hotels. He always looked, and indeed, through homeschooling, he was able to make many connections with families. So that he was always staying with families. He just enjoyed being around families and their kids and understanding or trying to understand what was going on with them.
So he actually had a wider experience than most people would have, because most people only have their own children, really.
That's right. And he didn't have the blinders and biases that we all have as parents, because, I mean, it's awful hard to be objective about our own kids. And one of the things that always impressed me about John, and even more so now that he's been dead and I've been reading his work and reflecting on my experience with him, was just his absolute empathy and compassion for what it was like to be a young person trying to learn. He could put himself in the shoes of a 5-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 19-year-old so effectively. And in doing so, sort of flipped the whole education paradigm around, because he was always looking at it from the point of view of how does it feel to the learner, instead of, you know, this, you know, manufactured process that we've come to expect education to be. I teach, they learn. John realized very early, his very first book, How Children Fail, was based on the question that he heard in the faculty lounge all the time. I teach, but they don't learn. He wanted to figure out why. First and most importantly, you know, we've been following the leads of our children, because what my wife and I realized as we reflected back on our experiences is that what we remembered from school and what we found valuable and sustaining in our lives as adults has been the things that interested us the most. And that, as John wrote and said many, many times, the only difference between a good student and a bad student is that the good student is very careful not to forget what they studied until after the test. And my wife and I were both good students, and we both realized the truth of that statement. And so we've been really, really trying to follow the kids' interests and build on that and help them gain competence and experience in the world by following their interests, very little of which has to do with the standard school curriculum at any given age. Probably the most controversial thing we've done, though, and that it bothers some people, is that when our children have expressed a desire to go to school, when they've come up with very good reasons that they want to, we have let them. Some people feel that we've somehow, you know, betrayed John's trust or done something wrong. Our feeling is that, for instance, my middle daughter right now, Allison, is in high school. She wanted to go there terribly. It became very important to her for social reasons. She had homeschooled and enjoyed homeschooling, and she may even come back. Our whole philosophy is that there's an open door between our home and the school. And indeed, all three of my daughters have gone in and out of school. Allison is my middle daughter. She's still there. But my other two have gone in and out and have decided to stay out. And so, you know, my 17-year-old, for instance, is pursuing a non-traditional path through high school. And my youngest is just, you know, she's 11, and she loves Japanese. We found a Japanese speaker in the next town over, and so she's taking Japanese lessons there. She's doing pottery. She's taking voice lessons, all things which, if she were in sixth grade, which would be where she would normally be, she wouldn't be able to do. And so, again, John's idea is that, you know, children learn best what they're interested in, certainly is proven true for me. But then, you know, the criticism that you hear is, well, then they're not going to learn important things. Well, that we found to be nonsense. Through her study of Japanese, she's learning about Japanese culture. Of course, it's inevitable. Through her study of pottery, she is learning math, which, if we decided to tackle math head on, which we've done with Audrey, has proven to be a disaster. But when we've just talked about, well, you know, you need this much clay to build something this big, most importantly, she sees her instructors, her professional potters, doing these calculations and talking about these things. So it's all of a piece, and all the math that she needs to know is embedded in these activities. They're not artificial constructs considered to be educational. One of the things that has been really interesting and gratifying to me has been understanding the work of Ivan Illich more and understanding why he influenced John Holt, why John Holt was such a big fan of Ivan's work. Illich wrote a book called Deschooling Society, which many people misinterpret, mainly because they don't read it. They just take the title and assume he's saying, oh, blow up all the schools, do away the school. That's a bad phrase now in this current climate. Let's say eradicate schools. But he was not saying that. His whole thesis in that book is we need to eliminate compulsory schooling. Schools make sense, or in the sense of having central locations where our, you know, communal resources can be distributed. But school has not become a communal resource, and it's become a private enterprise administered by professionals, almost as if it was medicine, you know, very expensive medicine. But what Ivan pointed out was that learning is not a scarce commodity. Our economic system can make it through giving out rewards such as diplomas and stuff based on who pays the most money to consume the most education credentials. But is that really learning? And when Holt realized that Illich's point that schooling is not the same as education, that really freed him up to start exploring all sorts of ideas about, well, how else can we help children and adults learn?
You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
In 1976, Holt wrote a book. This was just the year before he embraced homeschooling. And the book is called Instead of Education, Ways to Help People Do Things Better. I'm really glad that this book is coming back out in print. A publisher named Sentient Publications is bringing it out this fall 2003. And in it, John not only outlines the reasons why compulsory education is, as he puts it, the most destructive force on earth. And again, we see this all the time when employers say, you know, I've got these college graduates who don't know how to do anything. I've got these high school graduates who can't write their name. And what Yvonne pointed out in 1971 is that all institutions seem to hit a point where they become counterproductive. And so mass transportation creates traffic jams. Inoculations and medicine creates illnesses like the antibiotic failures we're seeing now. We suddenly turn a corner when these things get too big. And in education, as Yvonne Poulsen terms it, schools create stupidity. And this is one of the things that Holt noted early on, is that children are born learning. They come in eager and full of questions and full of adventure and are fearless. In fact, you're constantly, parents of young children are exhausted trying to keep them safe from pulling things down and putting things in their mouths, you know. It's a biological imperative to learn. I believe it was John that said, you know, birds fly, fish swim, humans learn. It's our nature. But you would never guess that once they reach school. Then all of a sudden we're saying, oh, you know, they have this deficit and all these learning disabilities and so on. And so what's going on here? It's a very long and involved analysis, which, if anyone's interested, certainly Deschooling Society and Instead of Education would be two cornerstone books, I would say, to examine in this question. But right now we've come to the point where education is the one thing that is never questioned in society. It's like it has nothing but benefits. But I think that in reality, and there's a long history of criticism that goes well, much earlier than Ivan Illich in 1971. And John Gatto, an American school teacher who wrote a book called Dumbing Us Down and several other books, has been excellent at analyzing the history behind the compulsory school movement and why alternatives such as private schools, Montessori, Waldorf, homeschools, Christian schools, independent schools, why they all have success and in some cases, obviously, more success than their public school systems. And trying to analyze the whole question of education from the point of view of schooling always comes back to, well, you know, we have to preserve the institution of school. But what John Holt did was he said, let's put the learner at the center of this and then analyze schooling. And what John came up with was, you know, back in the late 60s, he was talking that school should be a smorgasbord for children. They should be able to pick and choose what they want to learn and learn from people, including the people that they want to learn from. You can have a strong interest in Japanese, as my youngest daughter does, but if she didn't hit it off with that teacher, you know, we would go out and try and find another teacher. Fortunately, she did. But in school, as my daughter Allison's learning with high school, we got all these documents that we had to sign before she started high school. It said, if she doesn't like her teachers, tough. They don't have enough teachers to go around. So the teachers that she gets, she only has 3 days to transfer or request a transfer. And after that, you're sunk. And they can only give her a transfer if they have another teacher in that subject area, which in this day of budget cuts is highly unlikely. So John was and Yvonne weren't saying, let's do away with schools. They're saying, let's do away with the system of education that simply rewards people who go through it. Just going through it and getting credentialed doesn't mean that you know how to do anything, as we see all the time, you know. There are PhDs driving taxis and so on. You know, there's not this clear line that we've been led to believe that if you march through the grades of school or through the rungs of education, you will then wind up this well-credentialed, well-rounded citizen capable of taking any job. In fact, most people are confused and wind up learning what they need to learn in order to get their jobs done on the job.
Yourself to go again. Cold water in the face brings you back. merchants and your bankers too. Let's get up and learn those rules. When the man and the crazy chief, one says sun and one says sea, AM and FM, the PM too, turning out that boogaloo. Gets you up and I guess you out, but how long can you keep it up? Give me Honda, give me Sonic, so cheap and real phony. Hong Kong dollar, Indian cents, English pounds and Eskimo pence. Seen the ads, cause it's nice. Better work hard, I seen the price. Never mind that, it's time for the bus. We got to work, and you're one of us. Clocks go slow in a place of work. Minutes drag and the hours judge. Yeah, we're bye-bye. Wave bye-bye to the boss. It's our profit, it's his loss. But anyway, the lunch bell ring. Take one out, do y'all. Chief Boyga. What do we have for entertainment? Cops kicking gypsies on the pavement. Now the news has led to attention. Lunar landing of the dentist convention. Italian monster shoots a lobster. See-through restaurant gets out of hand. Car in the fridge, a fridge in the car. My cowboy's doing TV land.
You know what? Don't stop, keep it up.
Sweat some more. The sun will sink and we'll get out the door. It's no good for man to work in cages. Hit the town, he drinks his wages. Your friend, your sweat. But did you notice you ain't getting? Your friend, your sweat. But did you notice not getting anywhere? Don't you ever stop long enough to start. Take your car out of that gear. Don't you ever stop long enough to start. Get your car out of that gear. Call the marks, a fire and Engels came to the checkout at the 7-Eleven. Marks was good, but he had sense. Engels, Lenin, the necessary events. What do we got? Yeah. What do we got? Yeah. What do we got? Magnificent. What do we got? Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi went to the park to check on the game, but they was murdered by the other team. Went on to win 50-0. You can't be true, you can't be false. You'll be given the same reward. Socrates and Milhouse Dixon both went the same way through the kitchen. Plato the Greek or in Tin Tin. Who's more famous to the billion millions? Who's Flash? Vacuum cleaner sucks up budgie.
I'm Noam Chomsky. You're listening to Radio Free School on CFMU 93.3.
John was completely with the students in the late 60s. In fact, in his book, The Underachieving School, that he wrote in 1968, he describes the campus riots at the University of California at Berkeley, where he was a visiting lecturer. And he sided with the students, and the book ends with his letter of resignation to the provost of UCal Berkeley, saying that, you know, you put these riots down, you threw these kids in jail, and, you know, you shot at them and all this other stuff. Why didn't you engage them in dialogue? Why just resort to force? And that was really one of the incidents that made him start to realize that perhaps this revolution idea is not the way things change. And indeed, in the very first issue of Growing Without Schooling magazine, which was published in August of 1977, John writes, on the front page about his why he's doing this magazine, and he calls it his nickel and dime theory of social change. What he decided was, after many years of being in the anti-war movement in Vietnam and trying to change the school reform movement of the 60s and 70s, the open classroom movement, and the student protests against the war and against compulsory education and whatnot, and he saw how all those were very quickly put down. The open school movement had very few advocates, although listening to the education establishment talk, you'd think it was what undermined the entire country, but subsequent studies have shown that less than 2 or 3% of all classrooms in America adopted any sort of free school or open classroom reform. So Munjan realized that the tenor of the country and of most people was against these changes. He realized that, you know, having any open overnight change is just ridiculous. It's not going to happen. It's a fantasy. Mm-hmm. But what really changes people's lives, he realized, by looking at different movements, and particularly, you know, things like breastfeeding and natural childbirth and the Back to the Land movement that were all very popular in the 70s, and John had his finger on them, on the pulse of those movements, he realized that it's when people change their lives, it's when people actually do something in their daily life that continues, that real social change happens, because then they influence somebody else and somebody else, and then eventually you get a movement going. But is it really a movement when it happens this way? This actually is an academic paper describing whether or not homeschooling is a movement, because it's so leaderless. You know, I mean, certainly John Holt is a key figure in it, but so is Raymond Moore. So are so many other people that have contributed to its growth. And John never wanted to be the guru of the homeschooling movement. He was hoping that, you know, look, he has his ideas about how children learn best, but he did not want anyone to feel uncomfortable that there was only one way to do it. And so he was open to all these and supported all people homeschooling, whether it's for conservative religious reasons or, you know, anarchistic communal reasons. It was all just work with your kids and your children will show you how they best learn and how you can best teach them. And so his nickel and dime theory of social change was that, I think the example he actually uses is, rather than yelling and arguing with people to change their ways, he just wanted to punch a hole in the fence and then stand next there and say, here's a hole. If you guys want to get out of this rat race, you can go through this hole. And that's it. And just talk about the option and spend his time. If you read the early issues of GDOS, it's amazing how much time he spent talking about the legal and political ramifications of homeschooling and how to get around schools and get around the compulsory education laws and how to do these things. And again, following the examples of many alternative schools that had experience doing this, as well as families that John found who had been homeschooling, because homeschooling had been going on in North America forever. It was just so underground. It was like a whole bunch of mushrooms that suddenly came to harvest in the late 70s when Holt started shining, you know, the spotlight on this, that this was going on. John's ideas about change and social change developed over the years, and I've come to adopt his strategy. I'm much more comfortable helping people homeschool. A lot of the ideas about how school works and social change are embedded just in our actions as homeschoolers, and are slow, and it's a much more gradual, slow change of pace. And I know this upsets some people in the homeschooling movement. They would much prefer that we all just head-on attack the schools and try to abolish compulsory education laws and whatnot. But I think John is right. And certainly in my experience over the years, I've seen this. We are, while we're growing, there's at least 2 million children being homeschooled probably in the U.S. and Canada right now, if not more. But and that's a considerable growth, considering that when Holt was alive, he didn't think there were more than 15,000 to 20,000 children being taught at home in the early 80s. So it's interesting that our numbers have grown, but we have to remember that there's 57 million children in the United States of America alone in public school, then perhaps another 12 million in private school, and the vast majority of those parents support sit down, shut up, and do as I say is the primary means of educating their children. And that, therefore, any social change that's going to question that and question, you know, well, gee, you know, kids don't need 6 hours of school a day. Even if you do school at home, you can accomplish the entire day's curriculum requirements in about 90 minutes per child. It still leaves you a lot of time to do other things. That, you know, that it's better to go slow and stay below the radar until the numbers are such that it'd be impossible to shut it down. And that strategy strategy has served us well so far. And I think that's really the social change that's going on. I mean, some people want laws. Laws get revoked all the time. You know, there was prohibition in the United States. Then there wasn't. You know, and that was a whole constitutional amendment. It can happen. You know, people talk about a constitutional amendment for homeschooling to protect it. That's not going to happen as far as I could see. And even if it did, as I said, once the other powers that be get in power, it can be revoked. So the best change and the best source for change is individual families deciding on their own what's best to help their children learn and then pursuing that.
Sometimes wish that your life was plug and play. And are the words to this song concise enough to follow? Is your smart food simple enough to swallow? We're dumbing down, dum-dee-dum-dum, dumbing down.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.